Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, man.
And with the local DVC news, Edo Kuje with a triumphant comeback. More as total. But tonight.
Don't call it a comeback!
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a live edition of Weigh In Sports Talk. I'm your host, Brian Tarvin, and welcome to the show. We have a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to plan to go at least probably an hour, hour 15. So if you're going to call in and you'd like to weigh in, the number is 646-716-5564. And we want to make sure everybody gets in tonight. So we're going to start off talking about some Major League Baseball with the umpiring last night. We're going to talk about the college playoff, which is a big deal right now going on in the college football world. So hopefully you'll call and weigh in. And I have two co-hosts tonight.
This happens to be hot chest stealing, wheeling, dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun.
And that's for Mr. Chris Ricketts. How are you, Chris?
Doing great,
Marvina.
How you doing today, man?
Oh, good, man. And we got Trey with us. How you doing, Trey?
What's happening?
Oh, that's a crazy week already in sports. Not as crazy as usual, but we have a lot to talk about tonight, guys. And Trey, did you see that baseball last night where the umpire called the out when the fan caught the ball?
Oh, man. Yeah, that is got to be one of the most unbelievably bad calls I've ever seen. So I know we want to talk about that a little later, but, man, I hope people call in.
Hey, Chris, will you go ahead and give the chat room information and everything?
Yeah, we got the chat room open right now. We've got Dan Alley already in there, so y'all join in with Dan and get the chat room going. And if you got anything you want to weigh in on, just let us know, and we'll try to address it on the show tonight.
Well, guys, thanks for Dan for listening on in the chat room, and hopefully, like Chris said, people will come in there and join you. We're hoping for a great show tonight, and we have a lot to talk about. So let's get started with congratulating the Arizona Wildcats on their first World Series since 1986, and also congratulate South Carolina for making the championship game 3 years in a row. I mean, if they would have pulled this off the other night, guys, it would probably have went down as one of the greatest things in history. I mean, going three times in a row winning a championship in any sport, almost impossible, Chris. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it was, I was hoping South Carolina would win game two and force a game three. But, yeah, Arizona, man, they were very resilient throughout this whole College World Series. I heard a crazy stat. When they got to Omaha, they never trailed in any inning of any game throughout the College World Series. And that in itself is super impressive. I mean, the job that Andy Lopez has done with this Arizona Wildcats team, I don't know if anybody knows, but he actually won the College World Series back in the late 90s, I believe, with Pepperdine.
Yep.
And then he went on to Florida, and I think he ended up taking them to the College World Series, didn't win a national title with them, and now he goes to Arizona to coach his two sons that are on the team there and ends up leading them to a national title. So congratulations to Andy Lopez and Arizona Wildcats. Like you said, they have a very formidable opponent in the back-to-back champion South Carolina Gamecocks, and we're just able to grind it out and get two victories and go home with the national title.
And Trey, in sports, it's really in these kind of settings, it's how hot are you? You know, if you can play your best ball of the season early, like Florida did or whatever, and look what happened to them. But Arizona got hot at the right time, winning 18 of 20 games and actually 11 of their last 12. So, man, they picked a perfect time to get hot, Trey.
You know, Tarman, I mean, that's obviously part of, you know, the any kind of playoff type format, you know, College World Series or, you know, even the NCAA tournament is obviously how hot you are going in. But, you know, Chris brought up a good point, man. This is a really well-coached team. you know, this is also a very talented team. I mean, if you look at some of their pitching performances throughout the playoffs and even into the year, you're going to see those kids were for real. I mean, this wasn't a fluke. This wasn't a Cinderella story. This was a really good coach team who played really well, I mean, in the big stage. I mean, they brought their A game, and congratulations to Arizona. I mean, but, you know, if you're in the Pac-12 and the SEC, that's where it's been, you know, like 7 of the last 8 years. So, you know, you can't discount those teams in the Pac-12 because they've been such a phenomenal story, you know, through all the schools in the last 8 years or so. So, congrats to Arizona. What a game it was, actually.
It was. And Lopez said, you know, they were disappointed last year when they didn't make it because in 2 years ago they lost to Miami. I think it was in, like, one of the first rounds or whatever, but they knew this team was going to be special 2 years ago when they started bringing in this talent. And these guys can hit, man. It's South Carolina, if you can beat them 2 games in a row, and this is a team, South Carolina, Chris, they don't lose in playoffs. They don't lose in the postseason. And they made it look easy, honestly. Arizona made it look easy.
Yeah, they really did. And I thought that, you know, the key hit in the game, of course, was against Matt Price of the South Carolina Gamecocks. And for those of you that don't know this kid, I mean, this kid, I think, has 5 wins total over the last 2 years. I mean, he's like one of the most dominant relief pitchers that South Carolina's ever had and that ever pitched in the College World Series. And they were able to guy was able to pull one down the line and score 2 runs there at the end. And, you know, South Carolina, even though I know there's a lot of disappointment, I mean, they still have to feel proud because this is a relatively young South Carolina team. They had to replace, I think, 6 starters off of last year's squad. So this team is made up primarily of freshmen and sophomores. So I expect the Gamecocks to be back in the mix next year. So I know a lot of South Carolina fans are disappointed, but, you know, they got to be super proud of the effort, especially after losing all those players after last year.
Yeah, if you're a South Carolina fan, guys, you're feeling real good about the future. And this coach seems like he knows how to motivate his team, and also having those freshmen there last year that maybe didn't get to play, be around in that atmosphere and that environment, and be around juniors and seniors that know how to win. You know, and that's contagious. And baseball is a little different than football, of course, but I look for South Carolina to make it a deep run again. I see no reason, you know, why South Carolina can't be there next year again. But 3 years in a row, guys, my hat's off to South Carolina. They didn't win it. I think the better team won, honestly, right now. I think Arizona is just a little better than South Carolina. Trey, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that was clear if you watched the tournament from my eyes was how good the Arizona team was. And, I mean, they didn't play, you know, a bunch of chumps, you know, in the College World Series or even in their run up to there. I mean, they beat UCLA, who, you know, if you watched any college baseball, had a tremendous pitching staff. You know, they beat them, and they beat Florida State, you know, twice. And Florida State was the number 3 overall seed. So, you know, and then they get to the championship game, and they handle really, a 2-time defending champion who was playing with a lot of confidence. They had beat Florida, you know, I mean, who Florida was, you know, just a powerhouse this season. And so South Carolina was a super hot team themselves going in, and Arizona just played really well and made a lot of great coaching moves, putting in, you know, certain players and pinch hit drop thing was just a very good move. So, you know, I think it's the best team that went, Darvin.
Yeah, and that's a good point you made about South Carolina being confident. They just had to win 2 games in a row just to make it to that championship game against Arkansas, a team that's very familiar with them. So, you know, you win 2 in a row, you feel like your back's against the wall. I mean, you almost, if you're South Carolina in that series, you feel like there's no way we're going to lose, guys. We're going to win. I mean, it's just destiny. We're going to win this series. But, you know, at the end of the day, they lost, and my hat's off to both of them, man. Two great baseball teams, and they both played with a lot of class from what I saw. You know, it's just – and the coaches after the game, they talked and everything. You could tell they're good friends. So it was just exciting to see a well-played series. I wish it would have gone 3, like Chris said, but it didn't. So next year we hope it's a little better. So I'm looking forward to be back. But any final things on the College World Series before we move on?
No, I'm good.
No, I think it's just another chance for sports fans to get more involved with the college, you know, sport other than football. You know, basketball has gotten popular, and I think you're really seeing college baseball get more and more popular. So, I mean, just another great finish for college baseball.
You know, what's exciting watching, and I know the college softball World Series, those girls can play, man. Seeing those pitchers, and, I mean, it's a very strategic game when you get to that level, and it's just fun. I officiated a lot, so it's just fun to be able to watch it on TV. These girls are good. I think Alabama won that one. So, I mean, it's just all around, you know, for the SEC, a pretty good year for sports. And we're about to start over again in college football, guys.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait, man.
But before we get to college football, which I want to talk just a second about Drew Brees, guys. You know, the Saints, he's trying to negotiate a deal. I read today, and I just wanted to see what y'all thought and the listeners out there. He's filed a grievance with the NFL against the New Orleans Saints. And it's for something he was very outspoken last year during the lockout or whatever it was, but he filed a grievance thinking they're discriminating against him for being like that. Trey, have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I heard briefly about that he had filed a grievance, but I didn't know the details of it. I mean, I knew that he filed a grievance about something, but I haven't seen the different aspects of it, I guess.
Chris, have you heard?
No, I haven't heard anything on that yet. So, I'm a little bit unclear as what his basis for that grievance is or anything like that.
Well, he was outspoken last year, and he knows right now the Saints are playing kind of hardball with him. And I think, Saints can do what they want to, but I think Drew Brees has earned, a contract. But I think with the bounty gate going on, with people being suspended, I don't know. Do you think that's the reason maybe the Saints won't spend that kind of money maybe? Maybe they're trying to say, well, if it's going to be like this, we might as well get rid of Drew Brees and just go with what we got,
I don't think. I mean, if you're the New Orleans Saints, I mean, there's no way in the world you let this guy walk. I mean, with all the turmoil that's went on with Bounty Gate and the suspension of all the coaches, you have to have some type of, stability brought back to your organization. And that stability is Drew Brees. I mean, he knows that offense like the back of his hand. So, if you lose Sean Payton, the next best thing to have is Drew Brees because he knows all the intricacies of that offense. So, I mean, if your management of the New Orleans Saints and this is your strategy, then you need to have your head checked because there's no way that you can let this guy walk. You have to pay him the money. I think a big reason why they really haven't gotten a deal done is because of the bounty gate stuff. Not on the sense that, okay, we're not going to sign him because all this stuff's going on, but just the fact that they've had to deal with all this stuff in the offseason, it's just eating up time, and it's taken the time away from them getting that contract signed because, I hear different reports that, they're kind of close on money, but they're just working out the fine details, and then, this comes out, and now Brees is saying he's kind of being, I guess, blackballed by the New Orleans Saints, so me personally,
he
I
is.
Don't think there's no way that yeah, I don't think yeah. I don't think that they're trying to not pay this guy. I mean, I don't know. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, I think that he's on to something. I think when you're around an organization like he is, and you're really the face of it, you know what goes on behind the scenes. You know what people really think of you, and I think he gets the sense of hey, either you're out of your mind. Like you said, either, you're out of your mind or there's something wrong. And he's starting to see that maybe it's something that he did. So he's just trying to make sure that he's not discriminated against. But if I'm a New Orleans Saints fan, Trey, I'm getting a little fed up because, season tickets, you pay all that money to go see the Saints play. Are you going to be going to watch a backup play and you win two games all season? Or are you going to be watching Drew Brees?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, and Drew Brees has been kind of outspoken lately about a lot of things, including Bounty Gate. And so, and classy as Drew Brees is, I mean, to me, this is like, you know, Tom Brady coming out, you know, at the Patriots. I mean, it would be such a big shock. And that's what this is to me with Brees. And to be honest, I give a lot of credibility to what he's saying because he's been such a classy player and he's given so much back to the community of New Orleans that you have to wonder when he's filing grievances and coming out, you know, very vocally against Bounty Gate, just what is going on in that in the NFL and in that organization right now, and that you know, Drew Brees feels he has to come out and do this kind of stuff. So to me, you know, I'm really wondering what management is saying and what they're telling his agent and just a lot of things right now. Because, I mean, why, you know, Drew Brees only does this, you know, I mean, yeah, this is not like his career has been, you know, marred by PR stunts like Terrell Owens or whatever. So, you know, I'm very interested in what he's saying because, I mean, he has credibility when he talks to me.
Yeah, and, you know, Brett Favre, did you hear him the other night when they asked him about Bounty Gate, what he thought about Vilma and the Saints trying to hurt him?
Yeah.
It's funny, he come out, and he said, I could care less. He said, obviously they didn't hurt me. So I thought old Brett Favre, he's always got those one-liners, you know. He's famous for those. But, you know, Favre could care less. He's probably hoping they hurt him in a way. He could care less about that. He understands that's a part of the game. But, you know, Drew Brees said, guys, that they had no proof of money changing hands, anything like that. So if there is a bounty, there has to be money involved. So there's no money trails of any sort. So at the end of the day, Trey, do you think these suspensions were a little premature?
Yeah, I don't know. But one of the things that Brees said about this actually I think stands pretty strong to me, and that's where is the evidence? Why has the NFL remained so silent on such a large scandal that they come out and said, this is such a serious issue, and we have to come down so hard. Well, why did the NFL just brought it out and said, okay, you know, all you complainants, you know, Vilma, whatever, here's why we busted you. I mean, that would be the ultimate way to silence this if the evidence exists, you know, or if it's just attenuated, I don't know. But, you know, I think when you have this regime where you have the judge, jury all in one house, and there's no way to get outside it, you know, I think one of the things should be disclosure. If, you know, the players demand disclosure, they should get it.
See, I think this is all due, Chris, those concussions and Goodell trying to show that he's doing something about it so the NFL doesn't get sued for everything it's worth. I think it was a little premature. What do you think?
Yeah, as the lack of evidence is coming out, I'm starting to come around to the idea that basically they don't – I think if they release what they had, people are going to say, Goodell, you overreacted on this. Because, I mean, look, he suspended an NFL linebacker for a whole year. And, I mean, we all know that, you know, the careers of these NFL players are very short. You know, it's not like me and you. You know, we can work 40 years, 45 years. And if we get suspended for a year, no big deal, you know. I'm just saying, in retrospect, compared to a football player, if he only has 10 years to earn an income and he gets suspended, the percentage is a lot greater. So, you know, I really don't think that there's a lot of evidence that the NFL has right now, because If there was, you know, Goodell would be showing his hands and look at all this evidence that I here's why I suspended these players for this amount of time. I don't know if he's trying to buy time, but he's definitely protecting that shield. And like you said, I think a lot of the penalties that were handed out were probably due to all the concussion risk and different stories that have come out on concussions over the last couple of seasons.
And if you look at Vilma the other day in court, I heard he stormed out. He was just so tired of hearing, you know, Goodell, the BS. And honestly, I'm looking at Vilma and seeing, I think the guys might have a point. You know, at first I was thinking, you know, well, Goodell's got them, you know, they did it, or where there's smoke, there's fire. But when there's smoke, you know, there's also, I mean, it's just like something's happened. And I think the more I thought about it, the more I started thinking conspiracy theory. and it's something to do with these concussions, and Roger Goodell just has a God complex. But, you know, as much time as they've said, hey, where's your evidence? Where's your evidence? Don't you think he would have come out and brought the evidence out, Trey, and just ended this whole mess?
Well, I think it's deserved. I mean, I think any time that you take, you know, someone's livelihood for an entire season, which is, you know, that's a big deal. I think that if, as long as the players are saying, hey, this doesn't exist, I think that if nothing else, Goodell owes it to the players, because this is a closed hearing type of system where, you know, you don't get to see the evidence against you and that kind of stuff, which just rings to me of just inappropriate. I mean, he deserves to come out and say, hey, Velma, hey, you know, Peyton, hey, the rest of this crew, this is exactly why I suspended you as a person for this, and this is the evidence I have against you, you know, or this is the evidence I have that implicates whatever. But, I mean, to me, it's just a foul that they don't come out and say, because maybe it's really strong, I don't know, but the point that no one knows other than Goodell is a problem to me.
Well, you know how this guy plays God and everything, but maybe he does have that evidence. Maybe he's just holding on so people will doubt him, you know. And, like, the more he holds on, the more people doubt him, and all of a sudden he turns over all this evidence. Nobody will ever question Goodell again, guys. That's probably what he's up to if he does have the evidence. He's trying to make people doubt him, and so they'll never question his authority again. So... At the end of the day, man, we're going to find out what happened. And Roger Goodell's a jerk anyway, guys. So either way, I'm still not going to like him. No matter what he does, this guy's bad for football. He wants to change the game. And I'm not all for that. But we'll touch back on this. But we've got to talk about some baseball for a second. And you know, we saw last night, Trey, you want to lead us into what happened last night in the Yankees game?
Yeah, I think you have a club for us, right?
Yep.
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
All right. For those of you who maybe didn't see everything that went on in the Yankees game last night, Yankees and Indians game, basically, you know, two guys are on, pop up toward left field, goes in the stands. Dwayne Wise, left fielder, kind of dives toward into the stands, goes in the stands, the ball kind of hits him off the glove, bounces off. As soon as Dwayne Wise is basically in the crowd still, where the umpire can't see him, Mike Demur, you know, throws up the out sign. The fan is holding up the ball at the umpire, you know, saying, hey, I got the ball. And, you know, the umpire doesn't even ask for the ball. And Dwayne Wise, you see him come out of the stand. He actually opens up his glove. There's nothing in it, and his hand has no ball. And it's just really ridiculous that he called an out. And I don't know, what did you guys think of that call?
Let me put it to you this way.
Well, see, I didn't know about it until, you know, you called me last night and asked me if I looked at it. And I didn't believe you at first that it was as bad as it was. So I watched it, and I'm like, are you kidding? And the thing is, Trey, and the funny thing is, he called out. And in order to call an out as an umpire, you have to see the ball in the glove. Have you ever noticed when a catcher is in a collision at home plate, they take the tag, and then they wait up on the guy. They wait up, and they make sure he has the ball, and then they call an out. That's the same thing you do with a foul ball in the stands. You have to make sure that guy's in the playing field. He comes down with the ball, Trey. The umpire didn't even verify that. And then he kicks the guy out for arguing with him.
Yeah, and if you hear it. What gets to me is, you know, and this is where I got a little upset this morning about it, was, you know, SportsCenter was like, he, you know, the umpire, Mike Dumour, came out and said, you know, after watching the replay, I got it wrong. Well, here's the deal. Not only did he get the call wrong, which is pretty crappy in and itself, then he goes and he kicks, he throws out the player who hit the foul ball. And if you ask him, you know, because they ask him, well, why'd you throw him out of the game? And, you know, you and I were talking about it. Maybe he came out and he was, you know, using dog cussing this guy out and using bad language. Well, that didn't happen. Hanahan apparently went up to him and said, you missed the call. Why don't you go back and watch the tape? And he throws him out right there. Like, I mean, if you can't even tell an umpire, hey, you got it wrong, why don't you just go look at something or ask another umpire? And if you get tossed for that, I mean, where are we at in baseball that the umpires are so godlike?
You can't question them or say, hey, you have it wrong. Here's how you can fix it. I mean, that to me is just ridiculous. And I think this umpire deserves to be suspended like 20 games. I mean, not only for the missed call. I mean, that happens. Okay, I get it. But for the complex to think that you can eject a player who is being civil to you, but merely just says, hey, you missed the call. You can go look at the tape yourself and find out. Or the Jumbotron, which I'm sure was playing it. I mean, that to me is just ridiculous, Tarvin. Riggs, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, it was definitely a comedy of errors on all parts for the umpire. I think a lot of the reason why he probably took the guy out because he knew he missed the call after he sees the guy in the stands holding it up, and he realized that, hey, Dwayne Wise just pulled a big sale job on me. But and then when the batter questioned him about it, it probably pissed him off even more. So he just took out his frustration on the player at that point, I think. Yeah, it was just a terrible call. You know, he knew he made a mistake, and like I said, he just took his frustration out. And you're right, Trey. This guy, I mean, that is like the first rule of umpiring. You know, if somebody's diving for the ball, or if the ball goes into the stands and or whatever, you have to see that ball before you can call it out. And the umpire just made the call too quick. He didn't double check it, and that was the mistake that he made. And it was only magnified because basically the kid, you know, two rows over had the ball in his hands, and there it is on national TV. So, you know, he's embarrassed and just infuriated himself. So,
but
you're
Chris,
right.
Chris?
I think.
Hey, how about the guys, you know, if you're the umpire that made that call and you're sitting there and even the home plate umpire is watching it, who threw the ball to the pitcher after that? There's no ball. The home plate umpire has to throw the ball in. So where did that ball go? If I'm a home plate umpire right there, I'm coming out and talking to this idiot that missed the call and said, hey, you missed it. Everybody misses it. But the bottom line is we need to get it correct. Your ego means nothing here. Everybody screws up. I'm an umpire. Trust me. I miss a call sometimes too. And when I do and I know I miss one, I'm going to take a little more arguing from a player. As long as he's professional about it, and he deserves it because I missed the call. My job is to be out there and get the call right, and I miss it, so I'm going to let him. But at a point, I'm going to tell the guy, hey, that's enough. No more. Whether I missed it or not, it's over. It's my judgment. And then if he continues on, then I'm going to toss him. But the way Trey's talking last night, it was nothing about the guy just walks up and says, hey, you missed it. Go back and watch it on film. And I think Chris is right. He was so embarrassed and humiliated that he just threw him out. So that's a bad feeling as an umpire when you're on an island like that. But, Trey, where was his partner at?
I think if I'm another umpire on the field, I mean you've got to go up and tell the guy, look, dude, man, the guy next to him was holding up the ball. I mean, but, you know, I think this is where you really do need some sort of public – you know, a baseball player does something wrong, it's immediately publicized. He gets a very public suspension. You know, you can't criticize, and you can't even tell an umpire he was wrong as a manager in the post game conference. That's a $10,000 fine. Are you kidding me? Like, I'm sorry, but these umpires aren't anything special. They make mistakes, and we should be able to call them out. As you know.
Yeah.
The player should be able to say, you know what, we got hosed. You know, Galarraga had a perfect game until the umpire missed it. I can say it. You know, I mean, there's just has to be some sort of accountability for these guys, and especially when they make it worse by tossing out a player. I mean, you know, I get it if the umpire, you know, the manager comes out and he goes crazy and ballistic and using terrible language and spitting everywhere and, you know, taking up bases and whatever. You've seen some of the crazy antics. I get tossing somebody like that. But, you know, when they come up and just say, hey, you missed the call, and they're civil, and, you know, it doesn't look like they're even arguing. You watch the tape, and it doesn't look like anything really egregious really happened, and he tosses them out. They have to say, okay, hey, Mike Demure, you don't have all this power. You're gone for 10 games. You know, as the MLB, we're going to do it to the players. Mike Demure has been suspended 10 games from, you know, misconduct or violating the rules or whatever it is, just like he would, you know, Brett Lowry for tossing his helmet at umpire, you know, I mean, like, he got to spend 8 games, you know, we all knew about it, and so why can't it be the other way? Why can't we publicly, you know, do the same thing we did players and managers? Why are they big boys, but the umpires aren't?
Yeah. Hey, Chris and Trey, you know, these guys, these umpires can make contact with players, and I've seen them be aggressive. And we've always been taught as an umpire, defuse the situation. Don't get right up in somebody's face. Walk away when you can. But I've seen umpires chase people almost, and when they touch them, it's okay. But my God, if you even breathe on one, you're suspended and humiliated on ESPN. So something has to be done, and they're talking about adding a fifth guy to the crew where they're sitting up in the replay box for certain things. So the only way that play can be challenged is if that umpire upstairs calls it down and says, hey, I think we need to look at this one again. So I don't even think the coaches would. I think it has to be that guy, the umpire up there assigned. And either, you know, I don't think that would complete it all the way, because if the fix is in on a game, that guy could be fixed too. So he's not going to buzz anybody down if the fix is in.
Yeah. If you got a little money on the line.
But, yeah, Trey's right, guys. When you talk about an official, you should be able to come out and say, hey, you know, the official missed the call. Just like Durant in the playoffs. He didn't come out and say it, but I would have. And he shouldn't have been fined for that if he had said that, because that's all we see is players keep their mouth shut now because, you know what, they don't want to be fined $25,000. Do you want $25,000 taken out of your pocket, Trey? I don't. So if it means me shut my mouth, sometimes I will. And I think I think something needs to be done with the accountability. And maybe there's something behind closed doors that we don't see, but I don't ever – I mean, you would hear of it, you know. You would hear if something discipline was taken. You have to be able to hear about it. Somebody would write about it. But as far as I know, guys, nothing's been done with this, and I don't think anything's ever going to be done with the accountability part.
Yeah, you're right, Marvin. I mean, and you know, these plays that we've seen over the last couple of years, you know, that have had huge impacts on, like Trey said, on the perfect game and on this game or that game or whatever, this just kind of screams for Major League Baseball to get back, to get into the 21st century and actually, you know, come up with some reliable form of instant replay that they can use. Because, I mean, look, football's using it, you know, the most important thing is to get the call right. So I don't know why baseball is so hesitant. I know now the only time that they use, you know, any form of instant replay is on home run. So, you know, it's not going to prolong the game that long. I mean, what does it take, 30 seconds to review a borderline call? I mean, baseball really needs to get on board, and I think get a hold of instant replay and use it to its full advantage.
Well, you know, the College World Series, I don't know if y'all noticed in that last inning where South Carolina had a rally going, you know, that line drive hit to the, I think it was shortstop, I believe, and or second baseman, he touched second base just barely before the runner got back. And with a live eye as an umpire, that's very hard to see unless you're in perfect position, especially that play. So that would have been a perfect time to go in, because what if South Carolina, the next guy came up and hit a homer and ended the ball game because of a missed call? Like that. That's how, I mean, it's not that these umpires, they need to leave their egos at the door, and we do need umpires on the field. That's not what we're saying. We're saying we need somebody to look at these plays that are sometimes hard to judge or gauge and get it right. At the end of the day, you want a national champion because you got it right, not because you blew a call.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, guys, we're going to get off baseball here, and we're going to go into college football for a moment. And we have, about, let me give the number, 646-716-5564. If you'd like to call in and weigh in, hit number 1 if you would like to talk, and we'll get you in. And so, guys, today, or yesterday, whatever it was, this week's been long, the playoff was announced. It was voted on. And so college football has a 4-team playoff. Are you excited or are you concerned, Chris? Or Trey, are you excited or are you concerned?
Well, you know, I was talking about this off air yesterday when we were talking about prepping for the show. And my first reaction was like, you know, awesome, about time. Like, this is so exciting. And then I started reading about it. And I'm excited and concerned, Tarvin, and here's why. We were locked into the BCS fiasco for so many years,
because, you know, they signed a contract with the BCS, and it was like 10 years, and we had to live with a flawed program that basically they get something wrong, and they go, oh, we got to fix it, you know. And then basically, you know, and while I know college football moves at a very slow rate, you know, we had to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait for this chance at what we should have all the time, which is a playoff. And, you know, again, we signed on for, what is it, 11 years, Tarvin? I mean,
yeah,
really worried about the length of this. And I think a four-team playoff is in itself a great idea. I don't know the mechanics of this yet, and they haven't really announced who's going to make up this commission of play, you know, who selects these four teams, what are the criteria they're going to use. You know, this whole city buying into the national championship, I don't know what is that going to really entail? I mean, you know, so to me, I'm a little concerned, and I know a lot of people were talking about, you know, that ultimately, you know, we all want to get to an 18 playoff, and everybody thinks an 18 playoff is a really good idea. Then why sign an 11-year agreement to, you know, something that we're not really sure about, you know, exactly. We know that a playoff is good in nature, so, I mean, I'll take it. I mean, I think everybody will take a 14 playoff over the current system. But, you know, if we know there's something better out there, why are we going to lock ourselves in for a decade? And that's my concern here is, you know, a lot of details aren't out there. I love the idea of a playoff, and I'm super excited about four teams competing for the national championship. But, you know, I'm just a little leery about the details and the long-term agreement.
And, you know, I was one of the guys that liked the BCS format. And, you know, I always thought, well, it'd be nice if you could just add a plus one in certain years, because it might be next year. We might not have the two great teams to play. So you're just going to kill space and put a three-loss team in. Just, I mean, that could be possible. It probably won't be, but it's possible. But I think when the SEC, Chris brought it up I think last time or something, you know, when the SEC won this, they were in this national championship game getting all the spotlight. I think the presidents and everything snuck in and kind of went against the BCS. And really, it's kind of the same thing as the BCS. And all it did was add 11 years to a contract. So during this 11 years, we don't have any playoffs anymore. I mean, this is it. There's no, Trey said, let's build it to 8 or 16. I don't want to see that, but guys, there's no chance. Now, and I think they pulled the wool over everyone's eyes, and at the end of the day, they're whoring out college football and these players. That's exactly what's going on, Chris.
Yeah, I know we talked about this earlier today, and, you know, I'm with you, Tarvin. I kind of like the BCS format or the, you know, using different aspects to, I guess, calculate the number. I know they kind of tweaked the formula year in and year out throughout the BCS era, but I think they had finally gotten it down to where it was a pretty decent formula. I mean, yeah, it has its flaws, but my question is why do we need a committee really to decide who these four teams are? I mean, isn't there some way that they could use some derivative of that BCS formula to calculate, you know, some type of average that gives us the top four teams? That takes into account all the different factors. I mean, because basically what's going to happen is you're going to pay, you know, you're going to have maybe a 20-member committee that you're going to have to pay these guys to serve on. It's going to cost them an exorbitant amount of money, which that won't be an issue. But, I mean, you could use that money for something else. But I really don't like the fact that you're going to put all of your bases with the human element. I mean, whether it be the sports writers, the ex-coaches, whatever, you know, to me, you need a little bit of both in there. So I'm kind of with you. I mean, this seems like they definitely pulled the wool over everybody's eyes, because here's the thing, we're not going to get an 18 playoff until at least 2025. I mean, this thing is done. You know, signed, sealed, delivered for 12 seasons. And, you know, I'm with Trey, too. It was a great point. That was the biggest concern I have. You're going to sign up for this, yet there's no details that have been hashed out or agreed upon. So now we're just kind of at the discretion of these different committees that they'll put together to, I guess, set the framework of how this is going to work. So the public, yeah, in hindsight or on the surface, it looks like we're getting this great, you know, 14 playoff system, but we don't even know the parameters yet of how they, or the selection criteria that they're going to use to select these teams. So,
yeah, and, you know, a problem I have with the BCS guys is the formula with the computers. I mean, when I watch football all season and I open the computer rankings and see Bowling Green third in the country or something, it kind of stands out to me, like, whoa, what are these computers averaging, you know? Because, Trey, you've seen it all the time, the Sagarian, whatever his ratings are. I mean, they're always jacked up, and it's always got this Idaho team up in the top five. And that's the only thing that concerned me about the BCS was the computer sometimes. But, like Chris said, you got that element, but the human element's involved too, which kind of outweighs that if necessary, you know. And it's always worked. 04, Auburn got left out. It sucked, but that's what the system we had, and that's just the way it goes. And, you know, every year since then, I think they've gotten it right. And I don't understand, if you're going to do a playoff, why would you go away from the format we're in now, in a way? Build it off that same format, because honestly, guys, it works. And at the end of the day, we're getting our two best teams.
Well,
all this is going to do is make a 15 pissed off now, Trey.
Well, I mean, I'll disagree with you in the system's worked. I mean, there's been a couple years where you had split champions, and then there's, of course, been the years where, like, you know, in the Big 12 where Colorado spanked Nebraska and then got left out, and Nebraska went and blew out. You know, I mean, there's been years where –
Well, hold on, Trey. That was the last few I said, and that was before they made that clause. Yeah, it was just the last few I said. Ever since 04, they got it right, I thought. You know,
okay,
but, you know, going back –
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I still don't know that I would agree with that. I mean, there has been several times, like, the number three team in the country, you know, has been pretty darn good. And, you know, whether it was, you know, who's going to go in number two and, you know, all this stuff. And then there was, I can't remember one year where there was, like, four teams who had, you know, had one loss, and how that ended up getting picked was kind of shady, you know. So, to me, I really do like a playoff because, I mean, you're right, there's going to be an argument for who the fifth team is, but, I mean, come on. I mean, ideally, you know, if you can't have an 8-team where you definitely have, you know, the chance to have, like, a Cinderella-type story, you're going to have four really strong teams. I mean, yeah, there's going to be a team who's, like, number five. You're like, oh, we should be in there. Well, here's the deal. I mean, ultimately, it's going to come down to, you know, there's going to be probably three really strong teams, like there usually is. There's usually, you know, the last couple of years, there's been either two or three teams that you look at, like, well, they could win the championship. I mean, because, you know, undefeated seasons are getting harder and harder to come by. But, you know, you and I were talking off air about this, and what I really do want to see with this whole four-team thing when the committee is, you know, say you have three teams, and I'll throw this out there. So, like, say it's this year, you know, I don't know, we'll say it's Georgia. And I'll give you the Auburn, since you're an Auburn fan. Auburn, you know, they're great season one and two. They're like, oh, but those two teams are in. And say, you know, we have USC clearly in there. And then the fourth team, let's say, is Boise State, and they're undefeated. I want to make sure that team gets in. And maybe they get blown out, you know, by Auburn, who's number one or whatever. But I just want to ensure that, you know, those undefeated teams at the end of the season aren't getting left out like Auburn did or whatever. I want to make sure, you know, because when everybody has one loss, I think it gets – too semantic, and, you know, whoever can argue, you know, so sorry, you're not in, you lost. But, you know, I just want to make sure that this four-team format accounts for a team that goes undefeated, and they should be in there.
Chris, what do you think about that?
Well, it all depends on the situation. I mean, you know, Boise, yeah, you want to, I guess, protect or offer some type of protection for, I guess, some of these smaller market teams, but if Boise State goes undefeated, to me it's all going to boil down to, well, who do they play? You know, I mean, I'm not, if Boise State only plays, let's say, two teams in the top 25, but yet, you know, there's a one-loss team out there that plays, you know, let's say they play five top 25 teams and they barely lose. I'm really more in favor of giving that team the opportunity than Boise State. I'm always a big fan of strength of schedule because I think in the end you get the best product out on the field. Not discounting Boise State or anything, but you know they've had their chances before. You know, they had a golden opportunity a couple of years ago, and they lost to Nevada the last game. So I wouldn't say use that as an aspect of, I guess, you know, ensuring that one of these smaller market teams gets in. Because to me, it's up to those smaller market teams to join the bigger conferences, get better schedules, and play better competition week in and week out.
And also, Trey's made something the other day. Chris, what's your most memorable BCS game that you'll remember that you watched?
Well, of course, it's Auburn winning the national title.
Oh, yeah. But I'm sorry, besides that one.
Well, I mean, really, the most memorable one is probably when Boise State beat Oklahoma.
I agree.
Because nobody expected that, you know. But the thing about it is, the David versus Goliath stories are great, but – I mean, when you start talking about, you know, who was really the better team on the field, it was Oklahoma, but Boise State just happened to play the best that night and win. I mean, if that game's played, you know, three or four times, you know, I'm taking Oklahoma to win the majority of those games. So, it's a valid point. I mean, you know, some people want to see those small market teams, you know, in there and get their chance.
Well, I see what Trey's saying, if he said two loss a little bit too, I could understand. But there's got to be something built in to where those Boise States or TCUs before, teams like that, the Utahs, when they are that good, you know, they can't help their schedule, first of all. And I'm a big proponent of strength of schedule too, Chris, no doubt. But when you, with a human eye, you watch football, you know whether – I don't care if Utah won every game 70-0 and beat Wyoming. You know Utah's a good football team. You watched them play. So at the end of the day, you got an undefeated Auburn team, say. You've got a one-loss Pac-12 USC champion. You've got a Big Ten champion, you know, like a one-loss. But then you have an undefeated, say, Boise State right there. And you think they have a shot. Why not put them in that number four slot and put somebody, say, like Arkansas that was out, you know, just push them back? Because at the end of the day, Arkansas had a better schedule. But what's more exciting, Boise State, the David Goliath story? Trey, what do you think?
No, I mean, I totally agree. And, you know, the whole, well, they were only better that day argument, you know, well, that's the history of sports. I mean, there's how many times has a team, you know, won a game, they're like, well, I didn't expect that to happen. And then on paper, you know, Team A is better than Team B. I mean, ask Alabama if they played Utah, you know, in the bowl. Everybody was like, oh, Alabama, you know, Alabama just wasn't ready. You know, they had a whole month to prepare for that game. Of course they were ready. You know, they just got beat, and that happened. That's what sports is about. I mean, if you looked on paper, you know, we decided champions at the very beginning of the season based on paper or what's supposed to happen, then it wouldn't be very fun, would it? I mean, then because we'd be like, okay, well, LSU looks pretty good this year. I guess they're going to win the championship, or USC. But it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes Virginia Tech gets beat by, you know, that's for Rocco, you know, get beat by some Appalachian team or Michigan, you know. It's why we watch football is because, you know, we obviously want our team to win, but we want that story. We want those games. We want to watch it unfold. And so I just want to see that aspect of it.
Well, in every sport besides college football in this part, everybody can play for a championship. You start the season, even baseball, there's a lot of teams, but you know what? You can play and win it all. NFL football, what, 32 teams? Well, anybody can win it all. In college football, there's no way Tulane's winning it. You know, there's no way Kansas is probably going to win it. There's no way UAB's going to win it. So when they come in, what are they playing for, really? I mean, some conference champion and go to the Weed Eater Bowl? I mean, what are they playing for? So when you're recruiting the UAB, what are you telling them, Chris? Are you saying, come here so we can play right down the street at the BBVA Compass Bowl? What are you telling your players? Do you want to play for a championship? And there has to be something, at least to let them know, dangle the carrot in front of them, to let them know that, hey, there is a shot you can win. It might be a snowball, but, you know, it's very – I mean, you still have a chance. But, Trey, there's no chance right now for these teams to make it. None whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, Tarman, that's a great point. I mean, there's not a – I mean, look at throughout college. I mean, every bit of college sports has the opportunity for any team to win it, you know, whether it's rugby or hockey or whatever. I mean, they all have some sort of tournament at the end where, you know, who knows what happened. I mean, how much press did Stony Brook get in baseball? I mean, they kind of brought the World Series sort of a lot of press. And people were like, well, who is Stony Brook? I mean, Stony Brook actually turned it on Twitter, you know, which was something that even South Carolina didn't do, you know, when they played their first game. So, you know, it is good for the sport. I mean, and it is, I think, ultimately one of the reasons why some people don't like the idea is because it would create that little bit of doubt, you know, oh, my God, what if an SEC team doesn't win this year? It's still going to happen.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. I mean, the SEC is still going to be really good.
Hey, guys, I have a scenario for you. What if, you know, this human element and everything, how are they going to determine the seeding? So just say, for instance, you know, Alabama and LSU, kind of like last year, guys, you know who the best two teams are, LSU and Alabama 1 and 2. Then you have, say, Stanford and Oklahoma State. Are you going to put LSU against Alabama in that first semifinal game to guarantee that an SEC team, two of them don't play for the championship again? Chris?
That's the devil in the details that I'm referring to. That's my big question. You know, I think, and it, to me, it sounds like the presidents and the commissioners of these leagues are already trying to kind of do some of that. You know, they're saying, well, you know, based on geographic location, we might be pairing some of these teams up, you know, to save on cost or whatever. But, and we all know that's a bunch of bull, but that's what I want to see. That's the kind of details I want to see about this, because I think there's some ulterior motives here in with this four-game playoff here. You definitely know if two teams from the SEC get in there, they definitely want to try to pair them up in that first semifinal game to ensure that both of them don't play for the national title.
Yeah, and who's going to stop them? Who's going to stop them from making that decision, Trey?
I mean, exactly. I mean, who is this committee? You know, I was trying to think about this. I was watching SportsCenter, and the old Notre Dame head coach who, God, what was he? You know, some of my guys, he's always on College Game Day. I can't think of his name.
Lou Holt?
Lou Holt. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, Lou Holt, to me, when I see him talk, it infuriates me. Just cause I'm like, really? How is this guy on TV? And they were asking him, like, well, what if they, you know, what if it is former coaches and they pick you? Are you going to be it? If Lou Holt gets in there, are you kidding me? If he's going to be, like, who are these commissioners? Because if it's Lou Holt, I mean, oh, Notre Dame is going to have four losses and be in there every year.
Yeah,
I mean, that's why you got
to
be careful.
They're always favored to win the championship, Trey, in his eyes.
Yeah, him or his son's team. Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
better
but,
hope Dino's not on there.
And please, Mark May, please, God. He'll put USC and Alabama in right off the bat. There won't be you won't even play a season with Mark May out there. It'll be Southern Cal, Alabama. And that's it.
Exactly.
Pete Carroll's going to come back and coach Southern Cal. But, you know, the thing is, I think before this was approved, guys, and tell me if I'm wrong, and it's just, if before it was approved, let's put the rough draft, the plan out for everybody to see and get feedback. So if I'm making something, if I'm signing a 11, 12-year deal or whatever, I'm going to make sure it's the right thing, because if you put this plan out, everybody with a football IQ is going to say, hey, you know, who's this committee and how are they going to pick it? They're going to pick it apart, and at least, Trey, you can get that rough draft and make it, you know, put a formula in place to where it works. Because I guarantee you, when we see the details of this, we're going to be pissed off.
I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, you know me, I'm an ACC guy. I'm generally kind of neutral on some of these issues, but I'm going to be infuriated if they go with, like, an ex-coaches type of thing, because, I mean, you talk about bias. I mean, you can't have a committee that's associated with a school or a team or a region. I mean, I want to see neutral people in there. You know, I want to see a broad spectrum of commissioners so that it is neutral and you avoid what Chris is talking about. I mean, that's an SEC concern, but as a fan of sports, I don't want to see the two best teams go 1-4
because they're scared that LSU and Alabama are the best teams. I want to see them 1-2, and I don't want to see any, like, regional thing where, oh, well, you know, they got to make sure it's region. No, we have to make the seeding should be naturally the best teams. Okay, who is number one? Yeah. Who is number two? Who is number three? Who is number four? And please don't put Lou Holtz in there.
Yeah, that would be the worst mistake. Or Bob Davey. Davey would be one of those. I would be like, are you serious? But you know, like Trey said, the regional part, like, there's nobody that, if you know college football, you cheer for somebody, and you have bias, whether it's Big Ten, you know, Big 12, Pac-12, SEC. If I'm put on the committee, Trey, and I'm, you know, I'll try to be partial and be right, but I'm going to favor the SEC teams. And you know I would, and whether I wanted to or not, I would. And so that's really not fair for me to be on that committee. Whether I know sports or not, it's not fair, because at the end of the day, I'm gonna put the Big Ten where they belong, down in the ground, and I'm going to bring another team up in their place. And that's bias, you know. That's just a part of it. Who are you going to get? Even if you get NFL coaches to serve on the committee, they coach somewhere probably in college or played somewhere, and they have loyalties or ties to whatever region they're from. So, Chris, how are we going to do it, man?
That's the million-dollar question, man. You know, when you have the human element in this, there's always going to be some form of bias. I mean, I don't care if you get ex-coaches, ex-commissioner, you know, beat writers. I mean, even people that cover, you know, certain regions, they're going to have their own bias, you know, because they cover these teams in these particular areas. So they're going to want to see, you know, those teams get in. So, I mean, the only way to eliminate that bias is to not even include the human element. And, you know, then you have to go to some type of BCS formula. So there's not going to be a perfect solution. They'll just have to – I envision they'll come up with, you know, some rough draft and, or, you know, some initial plan, and they'll try that out for a couple of years, and then it'll be kind of like the BCS formula. They'll keep tweaking it and adjusting it until they get it right. But by the time that they get it right, you know, the 12 years will be up, and, you know, you'll probably see them expand that to 18. But for right now, Tarvin, I really don't see any way that you can eliminate that bias unless you just totally eliminate the human element altogether.
Yeah. So when are the details coming out, Trey?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. When are they? I mean, no one's really told us that.
Yeah, I want to know when they're coming out so we can see it, because what if it comes out and everybody's just outraged, and will they change it, or is it too late to tweak it? But I think this is the worst idea in the world. But, you know, the BCS, they should have tweaked the coaches poll, because, yeah, people like you said, right, Lou Holtz over here voting, and he doesn't know anything about sports, and these coaches don't even watch the game. So I think if the BCS would have done a better job in what they were doing and making adjustments as it went on, I think, you know, we might not have a change right now. And maybe it would allow us more time until we got something better in place. But I just don't – I think they pulled the wool over everybody's eyes after this SEC, Chris. I think once they saw this, they saw a chance to make some money and get this approved and go through. And everybody was in favor of a playoff once they saw LSU and Alabama on the field.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I know I've said this before, but when that championship game was announced, I mean, it was almost like the perfect storm. You know, all the fans of other conferences and all these other conference commissioners, you know, they were going to do anything within their power to prevent this from happening again. And, you know, all the hot talk, you know, after that game was, we need some form of playoff. And they got together and devised a little scheme or plan. And, you know, I mean, let's face it, everybody right now is loving this, because they're thinking, man, we got this playoff in place now. We're getting what we wanted. And even the NCAA came out and said, you know, we listen to the fans, and, you know, we're taking into consideration as to what they want to see college football be in, and here's their playoff. Right now, I'm with you. Until I see more of the details, I just can't say if this is a good idea or a bad idea at this point.
Yeah. Bray, any final thoughts on this before we switch gears?
No, I mean, I'm just, I think the playoff is needed for sure, and I'm for it. I'm a little leery of the details, and that's all. I mean, I think ultimately this is going to be a good thing. You know, you won't have some of the discussions that we have each year, and there's going to be really great stories that comes out of a playoff, but I just don't want to see – I hate seeing controversy associated. And to me, if you watch college sports, there's always a little controversy with any kind of tournament. But, like, in college basketball, the controversy is always like, oh, well, this team that lost 15 games maybe should have been in. You know, it's never like, hey, a team that was probably going to win the championship got left out. And that's what I'm tired of seeing with college football. And I think that we're going toward the route where you're going to see the teams who deserve to be in the game be in the game. But I just, they're very leery about how they're going to make up this committee.
Yeah, they're hoarding these guys. You know, the difference between the NFL and everything, they're professional. They get paid, the players. But college football, those players make nothing, and they make you know they make nothing. And if they take anything, it's going to be severe consequences. And we all know things happen under the table. But, you know, what do the players think about this? I'd like to just talk, and maybe they favor it, maybe they don't. But I guarantee you there's not a player in there probably that plays in the SEC or a big conference that would want a 32-team playoff or a 16-team playoff, because you're going to have to play more games and risk injury. So before you go to the NFL, you have a shot to get hurt. So I don't think that's the answer to it, guys. But I want to shift gears a little bit, stay in football real quick, just something that happened in Auburn. Quarterback Zeke Pike was sent home to Kentucky. I think he was at public intoxication, Chris.
Yeah, he got busted for public intoxication.
Well, before he came to Auburn, he signed, but he was on Twitter talking trash to somebody. So this kid's 19 years old. It looks like Chizik sent him home to, probably his last chance to say, hey, you straighten up, use this time to go get your ducks in a row, and you come back, and it's all business. So, Trey, how much can you expect a 19-year-old kid to really follow the rules and not get in trouble?
Well, I mean, one of the things is that you have to consider is that, they are such a young age, and they put in front of a big spotlight. I'm not big on hammering these kids for what really amounts to very minor things, and especially in the grand scheme of life, underage drinking, possession of marijuana, or whatever it is. I mean, Florida State's got one going on right now with James Wilder, the 5-star running back, who basically got popped on probation for underage drinking again. I mean, the kid's, he's doing what almost every college person does, underage drink, except for, they do it at the wrong place and time. And, the same thing with Auburn's quarterback. I mean, we're not talking about felony offenses or this kid being an, evil person or a bad kid. We're talking about, stupid indiscretions that a young teenager does. And, Chizik's handling probably a pretty decent way. He's saying, hey, go home. And now's your chance to mature. Understand that we can't have this on our team. Understand that, these rules have to be followed. And, go home, talk to your parents or whatever it is, but ultimately I give these kids a lot of slack, and this kid's necessarily not a bad kid,
Yeah, Trey, one thing I like about Chizik and I respect about him, and Chris, you can weigh in on this too, is you don't have to wait like Sweeney waiting to see what happens. Chizik saw what happened, got the results, and took care of it. He doesn't let it linger on and on. And, the thing is, Sammy Watkins should be suspended for this game against Auburn. And we'll see if he is. But I think you need to ease up on some of these kids. But Chris, you think maybe mom and dad called this kid back home and said, let me take care of you for a little while and make you grow up before you ruin your whole career?
Well, I hope that's the case, because, if it were my son and that happened to him, that's exactly what would happen. I would be calling him, get your first butt back on the bus back home, because we're gonna straighten some things out. But yeah, I'm with Trey. Listen, we've all made stupid, dumb, irrational decisions when we're 19, especially when it comes to underage drinking. I mean, we're all guilty of it. I know me and you are. So, but you know, cut the kids a little bit of slack. What I really want to see is how he reacts to this. You know, what is his, behavior going forward? You know, how is he going to bounce back from this? I think hopefully this will open his eyes. You know, maybe Chizik sent him back home. Maybe it was a combination of mom and dad, you know, saying come home. But whatever the case may be, you just hope that he learns from it and that he matures from it and just moves forward, because the kid's got a lot of talent. And I think he could have a really productive career at Auburn. So I'm rooting for him to get his act together, and only time will tell. So we'll see what kind of character this kid has and how it rebounds from this.
Well, that's the key. I think he has a good character. And like you said, I have good character too, but doesn't mean I didn't have a drink when I was 19 years old, under 21. But I think the kid's got good character. He's just a kid. You know, he acts just like a kid. He runs his mouth. When I was 18, I did too, you know, or 19.
Yeah.
We all did. I still do. I'm 35. So, I mean, these kids have to grow up and see the big picture, Trey. They just need to see, hey, you know, you don't have to put a lot of pressure on yourself. You just need to show up and work hard. And I think this might wake him up. It's better to do it now than to wait till he's been in school 2 years playing and then do it. So he wasn't going to play anyway for a couple of years. So at least he gets to go home, think about it, come back and work harder. So I'm interested to see, like Chris said, how he turns out. And it's I think he's going to rebound from this and come back strong. Guys, any final thoughts before we go?
You know, Tarvin, the only thing I got is, you know, on this little bit of conversation, is just, you know, sports fans are often very, very hard on, especially your opposing school, anytime they have a minor, you know, indiscretion. And, you know, I'm quick to razz you about, you know, about this story as you are, you know, about Florida State. But I really do think that, you know, you have to sit back and look at the big picture. And I think that's what is overall good for college football. And because, you know, again, college is about more than just sports, and this is, you know, hopefully this kid's chance to mature and be productive, because I mean the chances of him playing in the NFL are going to be small anyway. So more important that he gets his head on right and gets a degree out of this. You know, if he plays well at Auburn, great, but same thing goes for any other guy in any other school. So, you know, that's my final thought on that and on the show.
Chris?
Oh, let's see, final thought for the week. Well, hopefully Major League Baseball will, after this big whole all the blunders that we've had from the umpires, I'll say it again, hopefully Major League Baseball will take a look at instituting a little bit more on instant replay and getting these calls right, because I think that's the most important thing. You never want to see the umpire have an effect on the game, you know, with a bad call. So I'm rooting for baseball to institute more instant replay.
Hey, guys, I'm going to go to the phone lines real quick. We have a caller. You're on Way In Sports. Who's this?
Josh.
Hey, Josh, how are you?
I'm good. I got a question about this new NCAA bracket thing they're doing. How is that going to work?
How's it going to work? Well, that's the thing. We don't know. It's just the four teams that's going to be chosen by a committee. So we don't know if it's going to be conference champions for sure. We don't know if it's going to be sort of a wild card team come in. That's what we talked about earlier. It's just the details haven't really been given yet.
I mean, could it benefit? I mean, is it going to benefit the NCAA or is it going to hurt us?
Well, it doesn't have anything to do with NCAA. It's its own separate animal. The NCAA has nothing to do with this playoff. Am I correct, Trey and Chris, when I say that?
Yeah. I mean, okay. some yes and no, but yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, the NCAA, you know, it's going to help them in the fact they probably get a little more money out of this. But other than that, I mean, they're not really that involved with exactly how this goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Josh, what do you think about the playoff in general? 14.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure about it because, I mean, I listen to your radio, and I know you're the best at, like, asking these questions because, I mean, I want to see good teams in it. And if that puts out good teams that should be in it, I'm not for it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Josh, where are you from?
Alabama.
Well, what part?
Florence.
So are you an Alabama fan?
Yes, very much so.
Okay, so the Boise part, like a Boise take the place of a one-loss Arkansas team, you have a problem with that?
Yes, Boise don't belong in the NCAA at all.
Okay.
They don't deserve any kind of title.
Hey, man, there's a lot of people that think that way, and you know they've proven it year in and year out that it seems like when they get to that point, they choke. You know, right at the end. But they have won a couple of good games, but it wasn't for all the marbles. So Josh, anything else, bud?
Nothing. Tide's rolling tide.
All right, man. You take care. Thanks for the call.
Yep.
All right, guys. Well, that was some good conversation tonight we had about the college football. So, and I'm sure as the details keep coming, that we're going to be giving more information. But Chris, you're going to be away from us for a little while. You're going on vacation next week. Are you
that
ready?
Is correct. Yes.
Yeah, Chris.
To say the least, it's been this last month at work's been testing my patience. So I definitely need some time away from work. And so we're going to go up to the great state of Michigan. And so we'll be up there for a full week, and just looking forward to it. So. Apologize, I'll be away from you guys next Sunday and Wednesday night. I'll do my best to try to call in if I can, but I know you guys will do a great job, and I'll look forward to getting back.
And also, before you go, order an Ohio State hat and wear it everywhere you go up there. That's what you need to do, man. Or an Alabama hat, because right now Michigan's hating on Alabama,
yeah.
So anything you can do to get under their skin. So Trey will be with me Sunday night. Me and Trey will be together. We'll be going solo doing the show from 9 Eastern to 11 Eastern. Maybe not 11, 10:30 Eastern. And 4th of July is on a Wednesday, so we haven't made that call yet. Trey and I are going to discuss that to see if we're going to have a show that week or we're going to move it. So but Sunday, definitely join us, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central. Jake Crane's going to join us, and he's going to be talking about some college football, SEC football, and different things. So don't miss this call. He's a great guest. But, guys, have a great week, and we will see you Sunday, Trey.
See you then.
All right, see you guys.
See you, Chris.